This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 30. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books. From epic fantasy to urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, grimdark, whatever you're looking for, everything in between, you can find it here on the show. And we also like to bring you occasional special guests that are associated with fantasy books and reading along the way. At this point for my update, personally, I have a bunch of projects that are in various stages of completion. I'm still working on writing the first draft of Cyber's Underground. That's book three in the Sapiens Run trilogy. That should be coming out later this year in the early fall, I think. That's the plan anyway. Also, if you haven't already checked out the other books in the series, the first book in the series is Cyber's Change. That's available now. And Cyber's Escape is to be released on June 28th, and you can actually pre-order that now. So you might want to do that as well and get it right away when it's ready to go. There's also a limited-run hardcover version of Cyber's Change available on Amazon. So if you're interested in a hardcover version of the book, it's my first hardcover book. I'm pretty excited about it. You can pick that up over there as well. Also, don't forget all my ebooks and audiobooks are available through most library systems. Just ask your librarian to look up them in their electronic database for the ebooks and audiobooks. They use a variety of different apps like Overdrive and Hoopla and Biblioteca and things like that, but you'll find my ebooks and audiobooks there, and you can get them for free at your local library. As always, though, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to, you can always check out my fan group on Facebook. Jamie Davis, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers is that one, and of course my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I do want to just thank you for checking in. I look forward to hearing from you, and I hear from a lot of you. It's always great to get emails and Twitter messages and things like that, so please keep them coming. It's great to hear from the awesome fans of the show and the readers of my books, so thank you. All right, let's go ahead and get on into this week's episode. I'm really excited. I was joined this time around by James Egabine. James started out on a small dairy farm in Wisconsin, and then he went and joined the U.S. Navy right out of high school. It was an agreement he called the Teach Me About Computers and Airplanes and Take Me Somewhere It Does Not Snow and I'm Yours agreement, which I think is pretty funny. He completed 6 years of service in the Navy and then settled in San Diego, where they definitely don't have snow ever, I don't think. He attended school there at night while he was working and acquired degrees in engineering and business and finance. And when he needed an undergrad English credit to finish out his master's degree, he took a creative writing class and got totally hooked on it. So that's where he got started. We're going to talk to him a little bit more about that in this episode. So check out my interview with James coming right up. James, welcome to the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast. It's great to have you on the show with us today.
Great. It's good to be here.
So why don't you share a little bit about yourself, maybe give our readers or our audience of readers a chance to learn a little bit about you.
Okay. Well, I was a Midwestern farm boy who called the U.S. Navy and said, take me someplace where it doesn't snow. Teach me about computers and aircraft, and I'm all yours. And they took me all over the world for 6 years. And dropped me off in San Diego, where I've been calling home for the last 40 years or so. And I did a lot of high-tech companies. We'd go into startups and take them out of the garage phase and turn them into really big companies and sell them. And then about 5 years ago, I decided I'm getting too old to do that and found myself a programming job and decided I'm going to write almost as much time as I code. So that's what I do now is I work from home. I code all day and I write all night or write all morning.
Is writing something that you always kind of knew you'd do eventually, or is that something you discovered about yourself?
You know, I needed one English credit to graduate my undergraduate degree, and they put me in a poetry class. I got the books, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. So I went to the dean's office and said, give me something else. And she said, creative writing is all you can take. So I took that, then I got the class, and the instructor said, well, your English is pretty good, so we're going to teach you about story structure. And she showed me how stories work and how you put them together. And I was like, wow, there's actually some science to this whole thing. And I started writing, and then I sold a bunch of short stories early on and kind of took a hiatus when my kids were growing up. And then my wife went away for 3 months, left me home alone. I pulled out a short story and turned it into a novel. I hired an editor who told me how terrible I had done it in novel-length writing. And we cleaned it up and put it on Amazon, and off we go.
You know, it's funny you said there's a science to it, because I really think that people don't really respect the amount of understanding human psychology and the way that, you know, we are storytellers. You know, that from way back, I think it's been an important part of social growth to have that story being told around the campfire and share knowledge in those ways. And I think there's a very deep, visceral part of us that knows a good story when we see one.
Yeah, and I used to go to a group called Story Engineers. We'd meet at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, so only the serious people would get up that early. And we studied the book Story Engineering by Larry Brooks. And what was the other one? The other one was Wired for Story. And really learned the structure. And I use that structure pretty religiously when I'm writing now. And I do a pretty heavy outline because I'm an engineer. So my outline for the last book, for Indentured Magic, was actually 140 pages long before I started to write.
That's quite a bit. You know, it's funny. I talked to a lot of people, a lot of other authors so far on the show, and you're the first one that really does a lot of heavy outlining like that, which is great. I think there's no certain way to do this job. People come in from all parts of that spectrum between totally going with your gut and totally planning everything out. So, but that's a lot. That's quite a sturdy outline there.
You know, it is. I shared it with a friend of mine who's a professional big name fantasy writer, and she went through the outline and she said, you told the story in the outline. The whole book is here. Now, when you sit down and write this, all you're going to do is show us. And what it does is separates the logic of how to build a story and how to create the suspense and who does what to whom and where and what timing. That's all thought out ahead of time. So when I actually sit down to write the book, I look at the scene notes. I got a whole page of what's going to happen in the scene. And then my job is not to figure out how the scene works, but to actually figure out how to show the reader and get the reader engaged and emotionally engaged in what's going on. So it kind of frees up my brain from two different kinds of work, if you will.
No, that makes sense. And, you know, it's something that I started out as a pure pantser, and I've found myself moving more and more into plotting things out. Not to that level, but certainly each book seems to have more planning involved, just because I understand more about what I need to have in the story with each successive book I've written.
Yeah, and it helps. And I wrote Indentured Magic in 11 days. I belong to this, we call it JunoRimo. It's on Facebook and Twitter. And we do like Nano, only it's done in June.
Oh, cool.
And people are really supportive. We do word sprints on Twitter, and it goes round the clock for the whole month, and everybody kind of competes. And said, my problem is that for me, 50,000 words is just getting started, because the books are usually 120,000. So getting 120,000 words written in June is a real chore. But I actually managed. I wrote the whole book in 11 days. I took a week off, went to Wisconsin, plugged myself on my brother's table and said, don't bother me, I'm writing. And I wrote the whole book while I was out there.
Oh, that's great. That's pretty awesome. Let's talk a little bit about Indentured Magic, because I know that's what you wanted to talk about. That just came out this past December, correct?
It did, yes.
It deals with some dark issues. It's one of the first books. I mean, I've talked to a lot of authors that write what they call dark fantasy, but this is dealing with some really difficult topics, I would think. How did you arrive at dealing with human trafficking in a fantasy setting?
Well, I was planning my Juno book, and I was trying to think of what I was going to write about. And I thought, just another big, bad, evil wizard wants to be the biggest, baddest evil wizard. That's nothing, right? That's not exciting. And I saw a presentation on human trafficking, and I looked at all the people sitting in this big auditorium, and I thought, most of you are going to walk out the door, and you're going to forget. And it kind of nagged at me for a little while. And then I realized that I actually know someone who's a survivor. And I found that out by looking at some of her writing that she had published. And she talks about not what happened to her, but how she deals with it and how she continues to deal with it. And I thought, you know, that's a great way to put that story into a format that people can accept. Right. So it's not graphic. It shows you how the girls deal with what's happening to them, but it doesn't show you very much of what's actually happening. That's all off scene. Excuse me. So it's fairly clean in that respect, but it's pretty dark. And it was very a lot of work. And I had a couple of people that worked in the human trafficking survivors, some counselors and those kind of people going through it and saying, you know, this may be a little bit too much. This is probably just about the right level. And until we got something we felt was going to get to convey the message without being too dark. And it also will, it kind of engages you with the characters before you realize what they're in for. So by the time you realize how horrible their situation is, you care a lot about them and you just can't stop watching. Right. And they'll get you to the end of the book. And the end of the book has got a positive uplifting side to it for most of the characters, but you won't soon forget what you read. Cause when you read a really good book, it sticks with you for forever. Right. And that's part of what I wanted to do was to build something that would stick in people's heads. They're going to go, I remember that. And the techniques are techniques that are commonly used today. I did a lot of research and I'm sure my web browser history is going to get me in trouble.
you and about every other author out there. It's like how to dissolve a body with acid or something like that that's in the search history.
I would search on, you know, pedophile recruitment techniques for authors.
Oh, wow.
and actually in a couple of chapters portrayed how pedophiles groom children to be susceptible. And it's very common and it's really scary when you see it happening.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I'm an RN and a paramedic, or retired paramedic, but still have my RN license. And I've been to several, you know, programs educating healthcare professionals on trying to spot people in human trafficking situations so that you can try to identify them when they're in the relative safety of a hospital ER room, and try to get them the help they need. And it's, you know, it's, you're right. It's insidious how people gain control over others in seemingly simple ways. And you wouldn't think that you go, I wouldn't fall for that, but it's such an insidious process. You don't know it's happening almost until it's too late.
Mm-hmm. I took psychology in high school, and one of the techniques they taught you was reinforcement, right? How to reinforce behavior by, you know, rewards and that kind of thing. And I made a bet with a friend that I could train this girl to do what I wanted to do by using behavior mod on her. And we did the experiment and it worked. And I said, I'll give you, tell her what's going on and she'll still respond. And that was it. You could actually tell someone, this is what I'm going to do. And then you run this behavior modification on them and they respond even though they know you're doing it. So it's really powerful. Even when you know what's happening, it's very powerful.
Our son is always got his little sister, who's 5 years his junior, to get up and get him things. And he trained her from such an early age that, you know, she's 21 now. And when she comes home from college and he's over visiting with his wife, he will just say, hey, Sarah-Lynn, can you go get me a drink out of the fridge? And without even thinking about it, she's up and halfway to the kitchen before she stops and just turns and glares at him.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So it's just funny how you get in people's heads that way. My question to you would be, I found when I've written stories about certain topics, and I do try to deal with underlying themes that I think are important to kind of show a side of in a lot of my books. I found when I get into those types of stories that sometimes they seem to have an effect on me. And I'm curious if you dealt with any of that writing this story, or were you able to separate yourself from it?
In some points it was pretty tough. You know, when I finally sat down and went through the whole book in its entirety and in one whack, I was like, wow, this is a lot more powerful than I thought. And it took me a couple of months to get it out of my head after I was finished. It's probably now to the point where it's not something I think about every day. But it took a couple of months to get it out of my headspace and get working on something a little bit lighter and more fun, because it is pretty dark and it was pretty drastic. And a couple of people said that they had to stop reading for a while, go back in because it was too intense. And I never really imagined myself being that. I'm a cold and emotionless person. I grew up in a high-tech world where you have to be on top of things and you have to be calm and cool and collected all the time. So I kind of cultivated that persona in management. So building something that's emotionally, you know, so powerful was really hard.
I can imagine. You know, I know, yeah, as a first responder, especially when I first started out, you know, it was about building walls around yourself in certain ways to kind of separate yourself from the trauma that was going on around you. But that only works for so long. And eventually you have to find a way to deal with it in a more healthy fashion and sometimes, you know, get some assistance. And, you know, I read Michael Evans' review of the story. Mm-hmm. I apologize. I usually try to get a chance to at least start the book before I get a chance to talk to you. But I did read the review, and he talked about the fact that there are some triggering events and triggering situations in there that some people may not read this book because of that. But I think that's powerful. I think that speaks to the power of your words and the power of words in general. It gives us a tremendous amount of responsibility as authors.
You know, I think it is. And I actually, there's a couple of chapters that were probably way darker than ever made into the print. And my editor just said, nope, just no, these are going to go. And she took them out. And I said, but that's honestly what happens. And she said, yes, but we don't need to deal with that. We don't even need to think about that. So it's not as dark as it started off in the first draft, but there's still some pretty intense stuff in there. And they're topics that are hard to deal with. But I think the real thing is a lot of these topics, if we get people thinking about it and talking about it, they can talk about how to deal with it and how to survive situations and how to handle things that, you know, are uncomfortable or things that are horrible. And I think that's part of it, is to get people thinking about it and talking about it.
Well, and that's the power of writing in a fantasy setting. And honestly, I think you can give yourself that one step of separation and say, well, this is totally fiction. Yes, we can understand that these are real situations in some sense of back corner of our mind. But part of us can say, this is a story. I can separate myself from that. I know, you know, dealing with topics of prejudice and racism happens a lot in fantasy and science fiction settings, but they use the modes of having an alternate race of aliens or you know, robots versus people, or, you know, all sorts of different tropes that have come about to kind of tackle these tough issues without beating people over the head with it. And I think that's valuable for what we do.
This is true, because nobody feels bad if you're prejudiced against dwarves or elves, right?
And literally, I mean, if you read the Fellowship of the Ring and all of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, that whole storyline between Gimli and Legolas is really a look at understanding how prejudice works and how people can overcome it. And if you look at that storyline as its own separate thing, it really is quite interesting to see it from that angle. I've heard several people talk about that and looked at it myself. And it's I think it's one of the things that's actually represented well in the movie adaptation, is their journey from really distrusting and hating each other on a visceral race-based level to, you know, being best of friends by the end of the story.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what we need to do as writers, is to put a deeper meaning into the story, not just, you know, mind candy, this is cool, this is fun. I go to a lot of different writers group, and a lot of the writers aren't fantasy, and they like, well, there's so much description in here, and you spend all this time describing how they do magic, and, you know, I said that's what people read fantasy for. They want to see cool, unusual descriptions of places and things happening. And then we weave these underlying thematic elements into it, so they're actually getting a dose of a look at prejudice, or a look at in this one, and look at, you know, what's happening in human trafficking. And by the end of the book, they come away with a better understanding about psychology and sociology, and they had a really cool read too. So that's one of the reasons why I love fantasy, because it lets you do a lot of cool stuff, and you can still do something more important.
So I'm curious, did you find yourself something a little lighter to start on after this project was finished?
I did. In my main series, which started out to be three books, is now five. One of the characters was a sorceress who looks like a 16-year-old girl, and she claims to be 400 years old. And I thought about that, and I woke up one day and thought, you know what, I could write that story. So I'm writing that story. It's about three quarters of the way done, and hope to finish it in the next couple of weeks. And then I got to go through the long process of cleaning it up and editing it. And then after that, I've got another one. It's about a young boy who has a magical animal that looks a lot like a mink with a long neck. And when he bites you, you can do magic. So, and that's I've been working on that off and on, and I think I'm going to finish that one right behind the other one before I take on anything tougher again.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Now, is this the first one? Is that part of the Apprentice to Master series?
No, Indentured Magic stands all by itself.
Okay, and, but I mean the one about the wizard or the woman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called the Wizard's Healer, and that'll be book number six in the Apprentice to Master series.
That's what I wanted to just connect people with that, because you have quite a, you know, it's quite a nice looking series, and I love your covers.
You know, my cover designer is a good friend out in Midwest someplace, and she just started doing cover designs. So we kind of went through it, and she came up with some really cool ideas, and I really fell in love with it. So I'm trying not to let anybody know where she is, and she's not doing a lot of it, but she does them for me, and they're awesome. As a matter of fact, I sent her a big poster size copy of the Indentured Magic cover yesterday, and she was like all giddy and excited about it because it looks so good when you blow it up. So she's doing a great job. Actually, we just bought the characters and some of the expressions and some of the clothes for the next one, because she uses a product called Daz, does 3D model until we
Daz
get the model
cool.
to look.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we render it, and then she does a whole bunch of Photoshop work on it. And it's just phenomenal magic. I just love her work.
Yeah, my most recent book, in fact, the one that's coming out tomorrow as we record this, which will be about a month ago by the time this comes out, but it was the first cover I had. My designer said, I'm working with Daz. Can I do your book with this? And he showed me some of the model renderings that he'd come up with for my main character. And I was like, go for it, dude. He yeah. just did a fantastic job with it. And it gives you so many opportunities, because up until now, and a lot of people that are listening to this may not understand this, but we use, like, a lot of times people will be using actual physical photo models photographs of people dressed in costume. And then our cover designers then manipulate those pictures to make them look more like drawn illustrations, and put in backgrounds and different, maybe change the clothing around in some ways. But with Daz, you can actually design a character, you know, their hair, their look, their skin color, everything about their facial features. And then you can just put different outfits on them. It's like dressing paper dolls.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love it. I worked in Hollywood for a while in the 3D animation studio space. I was a techie, but I have no artistic talent. But I used to see these guys build animations for the television and movie stuff. It's just amazing what you can do. And now you can do that on Daz on your computer at home. It just blows me away. But I'm so excited about the covers she's done for me. She redid them all about a year and a half ago, the whole series, because I had started out. I just like bought some stock background images and threw them up there. You know, and that was back in the day when you could sell without having to advertise or market or have a good cover. And then things kind of changed a little bit.
The first book I ever released is on cover number four right now. So I completely understand.
Mm-hmm.
You keep getting better. You keep understanding how the covers work in a genre, and you make improvements as you go when you can afford them. And I kudos to her, because I love how your name on all the covers is consistent. You know, you've definitely got a brand that stands across all the covers, even the ones that aren't in the same series, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we actually did a lot of work on the author brand, and then we did work on the series brand, so that the series would tie together and the author is on everything the same. Right? And I really like the look of it all when you look at the whole catalog now. And I'm moving everything over to Ingram Spark, because I was on CreateSpace and I just wasn't happy with the quality. So I'm moving everything to Ingram Spark. So we're going to be redoing all the books with the new covers in the right size, and in hardcover and paperback as well.
What's your heart? I'm curious, because I'm starting to move over to Ingram Spark. I just got my first paperback proof in because I wanted to check it out and compare it to what I've been getting through KDP, and I'm happy with it. But as far as hardcovers go, have you gone with the jacketed hardcover or have you gone with the print hardcover?
No, I did the traditional jacketed hardcover, and it's so cool because when I got those books in, I was like, oh, it's a real book.
I think if I gave that, that's the book my mom keeps thinking about when I say I wrote a book. I need to get her one of those. So I'm going to have to maybe go that route and talk to my cover designer about fleshing out a full jacketed hardcover version for my books.
Yeah, you got to add the flaps, but otherwise it's pretty much the same. So she just did a little bit of magic. We added the flaps, and now we've got kind of the outlay, the templates for the next couple. So I think I'm just going to do them. I just like the hardcover, and I use those as giveaways and prizes and stuff. And people like the hardcovers are really cool because most indie authors don't produce the hardcover.
Right.
Because CreateSpace didn't do it. KDP won't do it. If you're Ingram, you can do it. Yeah, it costs more. You got to pay to set them up. You got to do another cover. The interior file is exactly the same.
Well, I'm going to have to – you kind of push me over the edge. I think I've been thinking about it, but I think I'm going to go ahead and move forward with it because I know like my local library wants to stock my books, but they don't want to buy paperbacks. And my local county library system has 5 different branches. So, I could,
okay, there you go.
You know, if they want to stock my books, it would be worth it for me it would probably pay me back the cost of doing a layout for, through Ingram, do the fresh layout just to have them buy all my books from that run. So interesting. All right. Well, that's good to know. So sorry, talking shop folks. We'll turn back around to talking story a little bit more. So you have some things coming out, just kind of as we roll to a close here. How do you like to interact with readers? You know, do you talk to them online on any social platforms, or do you prefer email, or what's the preferred method of choice?
I'll do email or social media. I was on Twitter for a while and I just kind of lost interest. My son was like, how did you get so many Twitter followers? And I said, I got a really great technique for getting Twitter followers. And I would log into one of these streams and find somebody who was posting an angsty post about how they were having a terrible day or something that's horrible happening. And I would respond with some encouraging message. And, next thing I go, got 3,000 followers. But it didn't actually do a whole lot for, book marketing. So I kind of like, oh, okay, that's not really a place for me. So email on Facebook, that's it. I do a lot of writing groups, and I hang with writers here, but don't get to see the writers too often.
Yeah, I've got a local con that I go to that a local college runs, and I enjoy going to that and meeting people face to face. But most of my contact is via email, and it's funny, people are surprised when they hear back from me. I always every now and then I'll get that shocked, like, "Wow, you really responded."
Yeah, I live on my computer. I'm on it all day long, and Facebook is up in one window even when I'm working. So I'm around, I'm playing in the forums probably more than I should be, but it's kind of once in a while I need a break from the code and I go and, play around a little bit. And of course, all my writing is done online. It's done on the computer and it's all uploaded online. So that's all electronic.
Yep. Me too. It's we're always seems to be plugged in a lot more than we used to be. That's for sure. But it's been great talking with you, James. I'd like to maybe have you back on the show at some time in the future as you have other projects come out. So please make sure you reach back out to us. Where can people find you online for following you on Facebook or on a website or something?
I have my own website. It's www.jamesegebean.com, which is just about impossible to spell. So hopefully you have some links
I will have the links in the show notes. Don't worry, folks. You can find them there. But, you can, I'm sure if they did a search, maybe Google will help them out a little bit too.
That's right. Or just plug it into Facebook, plug in my name. It's fairly unique and I'm the only one.
Excellent. Well, James, thanks so much for coming on the Fantasy Focus podcast. And, like I said, we'd love to have you back sometime in the future.
All right. Thanks much.
That's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with me and the rest of the team here online from the Fantasy Focus community. You can find us both on Facebook in Fantasy Focus Group and over at fantasy-focus.com. Please leave a comment there on this episode in either of those locations and let me know what you liked about it. You can listen to the episodes and stuff over on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Also, while you're over on the website, you'll also see a link on each podcast episode post that allows you to subscribe to the show. And that means you'll get every episode alerted to you and sent to you via your favorite iOS or Android app for delivering podcasts. And that way you won't miss any of the episodes. We have some pretty awesome authors coming up, so you definitely want to do that. I have the awesome James Lovegrove scheduled for the next episode, and you won't want to miss him at all. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me directly over on Facebook at the author page, Jamie Davis Books, and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you sign up for my newsletter there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Get the show automatically delivered to your device so you're ready for the next podcast. And in the meantime, don't forget, keep your eyes open because there's magic all around you.